FM News Talk 97.1. On demand audio.
At JJ Carafano.
You know, I was born in the South. South Bronx. Welcome to
the jungle. Jimmy Carafano, good morning.
Well, I'm only going to speak if you have, like, dramatic music in the background.
A little Jaws music, da-dun-da-dun.
Because we get these commercials all the time in D.C., you know, with the advocacy commercials, and you can always tell what they're advocating by the kind of music in the background and
right.
How serious the voice is, right? So when you get, like, the deep, serious voice and the music in the background, go, oh, my God, right? So here's the question I would ask that person who's probably just some paid, you know, narrator
right,
about border
right.
Industry. Which is, okay, of all those people that walk 2,000 miles to get here, how many of them are actually legally qualified for asylum in the United States? And the answer is probably about 1 in 100, right? So this is not a refugee crisis. What this is these are people, many of whom were convinced or cajoled or inspired or paid to walk up here with the promise of getting into the promised land and getting welfare for the rest of their lives.
Sure.
I mean, that's not the narrative you're hearing here. I mean, so that was one of the most dishonest narratives that I've ever heard in my entire life. And it's kind of like, we're not lying, which is true. There's probably not one lie in that statement. But then these are the same people that turn around and, you know, quote unquote, fact check the president, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's, you know, we fact checking now is just, I like my partisan talking points better than your.
Listen to there's one more piece of it here I haven't played yet, and it's where they, without realizing it, they uncover the fact that the president's strategy to delay this massive group of people crossing the border is actually working. Listen.
She's given up on waiting at the border, and now she's considering applying for a visa to work in Mexico.
Por el momento los vamos a quedar aquí.
Others have given up altogether. Hundreds have already left Tijuana, regularly heading back home on buses paid for by the Mexican government.
Yeah, the Mexicans are glad to get rid of them.
Absolutely. And the you know, for those, you know, a lot of us aren't really familiar with how the laws of refugee and the agreements work on this. And the way it works is you are required by international treaty, if your country has signed the treaty, and almost everybody has, to apply for a refugee status in what's called the first safe harbor. So in other words, the first country that you come to where you are not fearing for your life, and for many of those, that would be Mexico, that is where you can make a legitimate asylum claim. You're not legally, by treaty, allowed to just asylum shop and say, no, I don't want asylum here. I want asylum in Canada, right? You can't do that. The other thing is to make a legal asylum claim, you have to demonstrate what's called credible fear, which is, doesn't mean there's a, you know, there's violence in my country or there's MS-13 gangs around or I don't have a job. It means that there's a credible fear of persecution and violence and your physical safety against you, and that's demonstrable and real, as opposed to just you know, I need a job in America.
Yeah.
And what's glossed over in all of these things is, you know, people just ignoring the law, and what they're incentivizing, which is what, you know, idiots like that made that New York Times piece don't get, is you are weaponizing migrants, right? Because massive migrant movements are incredibly destabilizing. We saw that in Europe. And what you are telling bad people around the world is, if you want to harm a country or create chaos in that country, don't send an atomic bomb. Just send 50,000 migrants.
Migrants, yeah.
And these people essentially want to incentivize this process, are basically putting a weapon in the hands of bad people, and they're encouraging bad people to put other people on the road and put their lives at risk. And what they didn't discuss is, yeah, there's depression, and there's disease, and there's rape and murder and extortion and child endangerment and everything else. And whose fault is that? It's not the fault of the president, who's trying to stop this practice, which is largely illegal and illegitimate. The fault of people like that, yeah, who are encouraging it. You know, we had American lawyers go into Mexico to tell people how to cheat on their asylum claims, right?
Right.
That makes a whole lot of sense, right?
No,
that's
sure.
That's helping everybody.
Well, you see in Europe what they've done over there just welcoming people in, no questions asked. And then you look at that as a foreign policy expert, you understand what the president's talking about and what Mike Pompeo's talking about and others, Kirstjen Nielsen, when they say, we've got suspected terrorists, known terrorists, crossing our southern border because there are places where there are no walls.
You know, I don't know if that's actually, you know, terrorists have tried to move by every way possible. So I don't know, saying, well, terrorists might try to do this really tells you anything. First of all, the number of actual terrorists, real terrorists moving around is such a, internationally to the United States, is such a small number that, you know, looking at one way doesn't do anything. But here's the key point, which is, regardless of whether you're talking about terrorism or drugs or anything else, the number one defense has for people crossing a border to screen out a terrorist or a murderer or a rapist or a child molester or a money launderer or Clint Eastwood carrying drugs is to force them to go through the port of entry, right? And that's what the walls do. They force people to go through the port of entry where we are best capable and qualified of screening out the bad things regardless of what they are. So the president's strategy, he honestly is exactly right.
Yeah.
This is a political debate which ignore, and then, you know, actually this is, I'm glad you guys called, because what happens if the Democrats win? And I think it's one of the most Pyrrhic victories of all times. So if the Democrats win, are things going to get better in the next 2 years?
Of course not.
Are the caravans going to stop? We're not going to have many tens of thousands of people camping out and destabilizing Mexico, trying to force away in the United States. And the Democrats think that in 2 years, voters are going to go, oh, yeah, oh, I'm so glad we stopped that wall thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's vote for whoever.
Jim, great point. Speaking of Clint Eastwood, did you see The Mule? Did you see that movie?
Of course not. I saw the commercial, like the whole movie's in the commercial.
Pretty much.
I saw Gran Torino, right?
Yeah.
Right? A really crotchety old bad guy does bad things and in the end says, oh my God, I shouldn't have done all those bad things.
Eastwood,
I saw that movie.
Eastwood does a great job, but you're right. If you've seen the trailer, you've pretty much seen the movie, and you've saved yourself about an hour and 45 minutes of wasted time. This thing gets really boring in places.
Yeah, yeah, I heard it really
dried.
On the other hand,
it drags.
Look, this man is 89 years old. He has... This is the guy that people made fun of. He has won Academy Awards, director, Best Picture. He's been nominated for Best Actor. He has done a brilliant career. He's done it his way. He's a strong, independent voice in America, and I have nothing but admiration for him. And so if once in a while he makes a movie that's not like the best thing ever, I mean, come on. When you're 89 years old, you make your movie, let me know how that goes.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, from my wheelchair somewhere. Yeah. Good. Hey, Jim, got to run. Thank you.